Welcome to the Scariest Things Podcast, live from New Orleans, Louisiana, here at the Overlook Film Festival. And for the second time, it is my great privilege to have Amanda Presmick from Cinestate Fangoria, who is here to present the Satanic Panic world premiere, which we had last night. And it was a real treat. We got almost all the cast and the director, Chelsea Stardust, which is a fabulous name. We were kind of actually hoping to get a mashup combination of Adam Egypt Mortimer and Chelsea Stardust, and maybe they could, I don't know what their marital status is, but if they ever got married, we'd get, you know, Chelsea Stardust Egypt Mortimer thing. I don't know. You can't borrow the middle name, so I don't know how that would work out.
I did just see Adam's name slammed on screen. Just saw his film, and I thought the same thing. Stellar names, people. Stellar. So, gotta come out strong.
So for those of you who have been paying attention to the Scariest Things podcast website that we've been, we announced that Satanic Panic was brewing and was going to be showing at the festival, and it lived up to all my expectations. It is fun. It is kind of gross. It's kind of sexy. It's got a lot of the things that actually I really like about what Fangoria represents nowadays. It's that interesting middle ground. It's like low budget horror comes in many different flavors. There's a good bit of difference or range between Sharknado and The Witch. You're occupying some spot in the middle. And not to let me blather on, I think I should let Amanda sort of give us a little bit of an introduction about Satanic Panic.
Sure. I think that your take is spot on, so I'm excited that you enjoyed those aspects of the film. But Satanic Panic is a horror comedy directed by Chelsea Stardust. It's our second feature under the Fangoria Presents banner, and so you can expect them to just start rolling out from here on out. Puppet Master, The Littlest Reich was the first.
And that was where we first got introduced to each other, and that was one of my favorite films from last year. It has inappropriate in all the right ways, and it's just fun, raunchy horror.
Well, thank you so much. And Satanic Panic fulfills some of those same boxes, checks some of the same boxes, and then creates entirely new boxes and takes us on a very different journey. But it is about a pizza delivery girl who is just trying to get by, make a few tips, you know, the night that we encounter her. And she happens to deliver a pizza at the end of the night to a very hoity-toity neighborhood. Winds up encountering a cult of Satanists who need a virgin sacrifice. And, you know, they both encounter one another with a little bit of serendipity, and she has to then fight for her life and escape.
All she wanted was a $10 tip, and these rich Satanists would not, like, they're total cheapskates.
All they had to do was tip, and we wouldn't be here. We wouldn't be where we are today.
Yep. So the script was from Grady Hendrix, who we also actually just had a presentation for his book, We Sold Our Souls. And he, can you tell us a little bit about how you came across this script and also how you came across Chelsea Stardust?
Yeah, so Dallas was a big fan of Grady's work, Paperbacks from Hell, all that good stuff.
And Dallas Saunier.
Yes, Dallas Saunier. And he was also friends with Adam Goldworm, who's one of the other producers on the project. And Adam Goldworm is Grady's manager. And so, you know, they just all circled up and said, this is the one, let's do it. And I remember when I was first handed the script from Dallas, it is one of the few scripts I have read, and you know, we all read a lot of scripts, but I remember getting Satanic Panic and sitting down, and rather than it being a like an experience of, oh, I need to keep turning pages and get through this, I couldn't stop. There was so much energy in the script, and there's so much energy from Grady always. And that was a true pleasure, and that's what really got me excited about the movie from the get-go. And so when it came to finding a director, you know, the story is so female-driven. Mm-hmm. It's really about a strong female friendship, and then a strong female villain,
and a bunch of strong female villains.
Some strong female villains, some strong female Satanists, we just decided, we were like, look, I believe on a very deep level that any good director can direct any perspective, mm-hmm. but. For Dallas and I, we both said, like, we truly want a female director for this project. Mm-hmm. And so we sought that out, and we encountered Chelsea through that process. And, you know, she had a great mix of, you know, a background in horror and comedy. And she had just come off of directing her very first feature film, mm-hmm. which I believe the budget was about $500,000. Mm-hmm. And so when we spoke with her initially, I was really impressed by her ability to, say, look, I get what this is. I get what the low budget world is. Mm-hmm. I can handle it, and I know how to do it, and I just did it. And you know, that was as a physical on set producer, I was like, mm-hmm. okay, cool. That's a good thing.
One thing that was remarkable to me when I saw this was the budget. You were right around $1 million, weren't you? It was
a
tiny budget, and yet you had some spectacular sets. The houses that, and it sounded like, I think Dallas was saying from on stage, that there were some local Dallas mansions that became available.
So we had three main mansions in the movie. And, Dallas is a very moneyed city. But what's also great about Dallas is that it's not a film city, air quotes, in the way that LA, New York, Atlanta are. Mm-hmm. So not everyone is up to speed yet. So when I come to them with a pitch of, may I take over your home for a little while, you know, people aren't ready to charge me $5,000 a day or anything. You know, it's all much more homey than that. And so finding our mansions was a combination of just a bunch of different personal connections that, you know, after weeks and weeks of phone calls led to the right places, and just some cold emails on, you know, redline.com and Zillow.com that eventually went to the right people. And the hero mansion in the house, the one that is a $32 million mansion with a water park in the backyard, which we unfortunately don't see in this movie. We hope to film another movie there. But that mansion actually was, we found it because Dallas and I talked about it, and he was like, Amanda, just go onto Zillow, put the minimum at 10 mil, and then go find all the other houses that are above 10 mil. And I was like, I don't think that's going to work, but you got it. And so I just sent a bunch of cold emails, and I emailed the family who owns the $32 million home, and I never heard back, right?
Right.
Weeks and weeks of silence, and, you know, down to not the wire, but close to the wire. We hadn't heard back, and then Dallas just got an email. And it didn't come to me. Somehow it went directly to Dallas. And it was like, hey, I got your email about filming. Call me. And it was the owner of that home who, who had gotten my email, Googled who we were, what we were about. And, you know, as Dallas said on stage last night, had a son who was interested in filmmaking. So, you know, that kind of kismet really worked out in our favor.
Because Cinestate Fangoria is a Dallas operation now. And so it's... and actually, how did that come to be? Is it where Zoller and Sonier are from? Is that?
It is where Dallas Sonier is from. So he grew up in Highland Park in Dallas, and then went to USC, had a 15-year career in California before saying, you know, I want to build it myself, and B, you know, I want to raise my kids back home in Texas. And so he moved back, I think it's about 3.5 years ago, to Dallas. Mm-hmm. Immediately started Cinestate, and then, you know, couple months into Cinestate, acquired Fangoria, and so we've been plugging along now for about 2.5 years in Dallas, Texas, and it's it alarms me every day that it's only been about 2.5 years.
So for the uninitiated, though, can you give us the quick through line from 1979? Fangoria magazine comes online to 2019. Now Fangoria is a much bigger universe, and the magazine is a part of that universe. It's not the center of the universe. It's not the sun. it's one of the planets orbiting around that universe.
Yeah, this question is actually a tall order for me, so I will tell listeners in advance that I apologize if I get some facts little askew. But
I will tell you this. Yeah. I check in.
You probably know better than I do.
No, I don't. But I do check in on Facebook on a regular basis solely to watch Fangoria. It came from the vault.
That's awesome. That makes me so happy.
Just because it's like such an amazing little piece of horror provenance, and it's so interesting to crack open these boxes and look at production stills and look at press releases and just all this crap that you guys have accumulated. But that aside.
Well, so we did not personally accumulate. We acquired. Sure. So back in 2017, late 2017, is when Dallas got in touch with the previous owners, because there was that gap. There was a bit of a gap when they stopped printing, and it was kind of struggling along. Mm-hmm. And Dallas saw that and said, you know, could this be an opportunity for us and for everyone to revive the brand and this icon that we all love so much.
It's still meaningful to horror fans. It's a huge, huge name in the industry, and to have it disappear for a few years, because as a child, I remember at the Safeway or our local grocery chains, it's like my mom would go shopping and I would go to the magazine rack, and they would always put Fangoria at the very top so the little kids couldn't get to it.
That's
but
amazing.
I would climb up to go get that and Starlog, and I would camp out reading Fangoria, and my mom would go, "What are you doing? Put that away." So, you know, that and that's it. It's been sort of from a personal level, it was sad to see it go, and to have it come back so strong it's comforting. In a strange way, to have Fangoria back.
Sure. I think that's beautiful. And that was a lot of where Dallas was coming from too. Mm-hmm. You know, he's had those same experiences as a kid, and when the opportunity presented itself to for us to become Fangoria and be a part of Fangoria, we just couldn't pass it up. And from the get-go, the idea was that we want to embrace the glory of what Fangoria was and is and could be. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it was a very specific decision for it to be print only, at least to begin with, you know, and to make it a tome, you know, the for anyone who has a subscription or has seen the new magazine, you know, it's a 100-page thick, beautifully printed article. It's not a throwaway magazine. You know, it's a very special thing that you're meant to encounter over and over.
It's a prestige magazine now, and it's not. And you can't go now into your grocery store and find it on the racks. But you know, I got my back copies coming down here today, where Fangoria brought down a number of publications, and it's quarterly now.
It is quarterly.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful mag, and the great thing is it's all articles and bloody, gory pictures, just like I remembered. Without any, it's like you don't get the advertising filler. It's all Fangoria specific. It's fantastic.
Well, thank you so much.
And an oral history of the brood.
Yes.
You know,
you don't get that out of Architect Chioni, and you don't get that out of Wallpaper Magazine, which are also tomes.
I will say, even though they make the magazine down the hall from me, quite literally, sometimes I'm so absorbed with, you know, the movie production of it all that I don't see, you know, 80% of the articles until I'm holding the physical magazine in my hands as well. And so I saw someone at the fest turning pages, and I saw the Brood article, and I was like, holy shit, I love the Brood. I was like, that is sweet content. So,
goodness.
So on the magazine side, though, or on the film side, rather, how, what do you think the breakdown is in terms of that? Does Fangoria go out and solicit scripts? Do scripts come to you? Is it equal parts, 50-50? Is it like more one than the other?
I would say it is a mix of all of the above. You know, we do have so many friends in the world, right? Most of them are here at Overlook. So we have lots of friends and connections who, you know, we're constantly in touch with, who we're speaking with about their ideas and their next thing. And so we get a lot of scripts that way. But we also, just as a policy, we accept every cold submission from anyone.
Well, so, that's cool. That's really cool.
So if you have a finished script, you can send it to info@fangoria.com and we will read it. You know, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. The only caveat is that we want it to be a finished script. I don't want a treatment or any of that. I want to see the script exactly as it is. And so it's from all fronts.
Now, do you prefer going with original material, or do you take the horror tradition of we're going to reboot or redo this franchise? Well, Puppet Master was a great sort of re-spooling of that that franchise, and I think you did it better than Full Moon. do you have other connections to outfit, like the Full Moon folks? Do they feed things to you?
Well, the reboot of Puppet Master honestly was so satisfying for everyone involved that immediately after Puppet Master, Charles Band and Dallas were like, hey, so what's the next one? And so immediately after Puppet Master, we got with Charles and decided that we were going to reboot Castle Freak. So perfect question, because I go to Albania in 1 month to go shoot Castle Freak.
Is it the same castle, or
it's a different
Band's
castle.
Okay, because Band has a castle.
He did. So that's okay. Where they. That's. I don't know if he still does. I don't know the full story, but when they shot the original Castle Freak, it was at his castle. Yeah. I believe in Italy, but we're going to Albania. Yeah. So, okay. All that to say, there are a few iconic horror entities that we, of course, love and would love to get our hands on, mm-hmm. Puppet Master, Castle Freak. But we also, I think the drive that we all have is original storytelling.
Yep. Satanic Panic.
Satanic Panic is a perfect example. I get really bored with movies nowadays in terms of franchise rebooting. Mm-hmm. I understand that there are no original ideas. Like, I get that we're telling the same emotional story over and over, but I don't think that means that we have to just reboot the same damn thing over and over. And so it's really invigorating to encounter a script like Grady's and tell a story like Satanic Panic. And so we're equal opportunity in terms of rebooting an original, but mm-hmm. We really do want to... You're like, look, I want to create the next Jason Voorhees. I don't want to remake it.
Right. And something else that I really appreciated, back to last night, and tied into the Fangoria lore and tradition, is the practical effects. The gore effects that it's like, if you go through the magazine, folks, they will tell you how to do some of the gore effects, like how to blow your cheek off, make the eyes pop out of your head for all of you cosplayers out there who want to go over the top, pick up a Fangoria magazine. It'll show you how they do it. But this, knowing that one, digital can be expensive. Good digital can be expensive, and I'd be kind of curious to know if you know how much it costs to get high quality digital effects compared to these fabulous prosthetic stuff that you showed off to great effect with, like, seeing large amounts of intestines being pulled out through someone's mouth, for example.
Which was that one is so classically simple, though.
It is
that one in particular is a good example, because It's literally just, it's a camera cheat.
Yep.
Right. It's a fake mouth, and it's some plastic guts. It's so simple, and of course there are intricacies involved, and shooting practical effects can be all different versions of a nightmare,
right.
Just in terms of production schedules and when things go wrong and all that good stuff, but it's like you said, there's an intangible and tangible quality to seeing a real ass gut on screen.
You can't
out of a mouth.
You can't pull that off well digitally. I mean, I think the Thing reboot sort of proved side by side. Do you like the 1982 practical effects version or the digital 2008 edition of that? It's like there's something the convincing uncanny valley. That when you see something actually happen,
right.
And I think
human
the
human eye can't be tricked.
That's right.
Yep.
And,
yep.
And it is, you know, it's back to the days of George Romero. It's like bucket of guts. You know, we'll figure out how to like put in an open wound. And it's so convincing. It's still the best stuff there is, and I love that Fangoria embraces the bloody, you know, gory aspects of horror, because I know that in this age of where it's like a lot of the ghost stories and the sort of the real heady brain space kind of horror, that there's still room for sort of exploitation gore fest, but smarter.
Well, I'm more and more desensitized the further I get in this career, but I was showing a sizzle reel, a secret sizzle reel for VFW, which we just shot in Dallas, to my family last weekend, and truly pure, genuine, good humans in my family, and I just completely forgot that I needed to give a warning. I was just like proud. I was like, here's what I just did. And I like played them the trailer, and my sister-in-law was very scandalized. And I was like, oh shit. Like I didn't even remember that I'm supposed to tell you to be worried about what's about to happen, because, you know, when you see it on set in a practical sense, it's all, right. It all becomes a little, funny, if you will. But right. I even last night in Satanic Panic, there were some very gut-wrenched people in the audience, and I was like, oh, really?
In this audience?
Yeah.
Hey, kids, let's watch The Exorcist. Again!
Yeah, over and over, on repeat.
So, Our Lady, the book that came out this year? Did it came out this year, or did it came out last year?
I have no sense of time. I feel like it was in 2018.
Our Lady of the Inferno is the full title. Are we going to potentially see that as a movie? You don't have to just divulge any industry secrets or anything like that. But Eric and I both took a whack at that last year. I think you guys might have hipped us to that book.
And the werewolf. What was the werewolf movie? The book that actually our book reviewer Liz loved.
Yeah, she.
The interview with, I'm forgetting.
Lunar Activities.
Max.
Ooh, boy.
Booth.
Max, thank you.
It took all of us here at Overlook after 2 days of New Orleans to remember
Max
all those details.
Booth. I think it's Max Booth III.
Carnivorous, yeah. Lunar Activities, yes. And Our Lady of the Inferno.
Yes.
Both stellar. Our Lady of the Inferno is one of my favorite books that I've read in a long time, and one of my favorite Fangoria stories, because Preston handed Dallas Saunier a copy of the book at a Frightmare panel about Puppet Master.
Right.
And, you know, look, I think we all know that those encounters tend to just end in, oh, great, thanks. And
right.
Then the book, you know, gets read by 20 pages and thrown in a pile. And look, those are odds. That's just statistics. Right. And, Dallas handed me the book, you know, several days later, and was like, I think this is pretty incredible. Like, will you take a look? And it was an independent release. And so the cover art was fine. It wasn't anything impressive. And I remember looking at it being like, okay.
It's junkyard horror.
Yeah.
I could not put it down. I truly couldn't put it down. I burned through it in a day and a half. And we set a meeting up with Preston, you know, a couple days later. And he came in guns blazing. He knew exactly what he wanted. And, you know, from the get-go, Dallas and I imagined it as a movie as well.
So was
it's
it your
so
intent
cinematic.
To go... Were you looking at actually opening a literature wing of Fangoria? And 'cause that was your first... novel release, correct?
It was the first Fangoria novel, but Cinestate at its core from the very beginning was meant to be books, movies, and audio. It was meant to be all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so there had been a Cinestate release prior to that, but Our Lady was, I think, the perfect Fangoria release because, you know, there are all kinds of horror narratives and literature that are fun and valid and mm-hmm. great, and the scope is from the ultimate literary to just the fun and
pulpy.
Enjoyable pulpy, and Our Lady somehow was all of the above, and it really excited us, and now, you know, Preston is a part of the family, and
has Preston got something new cooking?
I think always, probably quietly, and we haven't talked about it yet. I feel like he's always cooking something, but Our Lady is definitely something that we want to develop into a movie. It's a very big story, and so we have to figure out how to do that and when to do that. But I fucking love that story.
So. Nice. I'm going to keep wrapping back around to the movie that we just saw, because the actress who plays the lead, Haley
Griffith.
Griffith. Was a bit of a revelation. She's new to the scene, and it was the I think Dallas was mentioning that it's like, well, now that she was so good in this, that she's probably priced herself out of the next one. Can you tell us how the casting went? Because the bigger names for those of you who are curious, Rebecca Romijn, Jerry O'Connell, probably the two brand names that come with this. But it's a big cast for a small budget. Little movie, you've got a lot of folks in here. So can you tell us how the casting went?
So two things. One, Dallas has a bunch of fabulous friends and connections from his time as a manager in Los Angeles. And so he you know, was able to call up his friends like Michael Polish and Jeff Daniel Phillips and be like, guys, come on, let's just hang out. Let's have some fun. And so that's how we got people like that and Jordan Ladd and Arden Mirren, who are all fantastic. Yep. That group kind of plays the cultists. Mm-hmm. But we have a casting director named David Guglielmo, who handles our casting alongside Dallas for the movies. And, you know, of course, with any lead in a movie, you want to be open to whatever happens, mm-hmm. but also, you know, you want a recognizable name, because that's how movies work. And so that was what we had our sights set on, in a way. But at the same time, you know, David was just taping mm-hmm. people who were interested. And we all saw Haley's tape, and I remember that moment of watching her going, like, I mean, nobody can see my expression right now, but oh my God, like, this is it. Like, I as a person early in my career, that was one of the first times I ever felt like, I think that I am seeing it.
Yep.
It in quotes, all caps, the proverbial it, and Haley Griffith has it. And so we had to, you know, have that consideration of, mm-hmm. well, do we need to wait and, you know, cast a known person, blah, blah, blah. And we just couldn't get away from it. We were like, Haley is the embodiment of this character, and we love her, and everybody's going to love her. And so
she has the right balance between sort of the tough chick. And then, but also but with the softer, more relatable side, and so it was a great mix, real combo powerhouse kind of a performance. And I thought that you couldn't keep your eyes off of her on the screen. She's magnetic.
Yeah, and the best way to describe it, I think, is it's not like she's a girl next door. Like, none of it's that simple. No. But I would truly hang out with this person and want her in my life, right, you know, and she embodies that on screen. She's just so fun and hilarious and enjoyable to be around.
The best bit for me was that her, it's like, damn it, I'm gonna get my tip. I wanna go barge into this house full of Satanists, and it's like, come on, you guys. Give me my money.
The rally cry of how the Mill Basin 1% of the 1%ers and the pizza delivery girl aren't all that different, and she'll tell everyone how cool they are if they just, you know, help a girl out is hilarious.
That was fantastic. Well, I think we're probably gonna. I'll hand off to Mike here.
Yes, but before we go, I wanted to ask you. We always try to ask when we have a guest on the show, what is your wheelhouse? What is your horror wheelhouse? And/or what is your favorite horror film? I know that's like saying, what is your favorite child? But just for kicks, what is your wheelhouse? What is your favorite horror film? We need to know, because we need to know what the foundation of Fangoria and Cinestate really looks like.
Yeah, absolutely.
The innards, the guts.
Yes. So the gory practical effects innards of Fangoria and Cinestate are that we want to make stuff that doesn't flinch, right? We want to make stuff that is not scared to be what it is. And that can be a lot of different things, from Puppet Master Littlest Reich to Brawl in Cell Block 99. It can be a lot of different things, but we want strong visions from directors who aren't who just aren't afraid. You know, that's it. It's both that simple and that complicated.
Sure.
And so the bread and butter of that is horror, gore fests, crime dramas, crime right. thrillers. Anything with a genre overlay to it is, right. is what we're into. But you know,
and what about you personally?
Yeah. So me personally, my wheelhouse and my bread and butter is indie filmmaking. And
yeah.
and I tell people when I talk about this a lot, like. You know how you have like security questions on like your bank account or like whatever. I shouldn't say this, but way back when, I remember.
If you want to break into Amanda's account,
yeah.
Fangoria
my social is
666 exclamation point.
No, but when I would set up those security questions that are like, what street did you live on as a child? One of them was, you know, what is your dream job?
Right.
And from the moment I started college and like realized that I was really into film and wanted to be a producer, my answer to that question was never producer. It was always indie producer, because those are the films that I would watch and go, this is spectacular because
right.
it's an indie film. And at that time, I didn't understand that because it was an indie film meant that it didn't have to cater to Hollywood and rules and all that stuff. But, of course, that's exactly what I was feeling at that time, is like, the stuff that I respond to and enjoy is singular because it's outside of a system. And
right.
so
Roger Corman ethos.
Very much so. And so indie filmmaking, meaning, you know, low budget, anywhere from $500,000 to $15,000,000. I feel great about. I love helping directors bring their vision to life. I love, executing that and making it happen.
Yeah.
My favorite horror film
yes.
is Rosemary's Baby.
All right.
Hands down, not even hard for me. I think it would be hard for me to pick a favorite movie of all time, but if you're saying favorite horror, it is Rosemary's Baby without question.
That's a good one. That we
yep.
just we did a top 100 list last year, and that ended up number six, seven, eight.
Somewhere in there, yeah.
Right in the pocket.
It has everything.
It
has everything.
Check
out Rosemary's Baby and Satanic Panic.
indeed. Well, Amanda, thanks for joining us here today. And we really appreciate your time here at the Overlook Film Festival. Eric obviously loved Satanic Panic. I think there's a little bit of a crush happening as well with the lead actress. Safe to say.
I support that.
So, why don't you go ahead and tell our audience where, if they wanted to check out the latest and greatest from Cinestate Fangoria, it is as simple as?
Yeah, it's as simple as following at Fangoria on all of your social accounts. You know, we have a big presence on Twitter and Facebook, and like Mike said, we have some very cool content going up all the time. We're pulling shit from the vault daily, showing you some cool retrospective horror things. So follow us at Fangoria, and then look for Satanic Panic throughout the summer. We've started our festival run officially here at Overlook, and we're going to go on to the Oak Cliff Film Festival here in Dallas. We're going to go on to Cinepocalypse and Fantasia, and so we'll be doing the circuit this summer, and the film will be released early this fall.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. There you go, folks. Check it out.
Thank you guys so much for having me.